So we begin with Psalm 146. As an introductory suggestion, it's an invitation, as I think you'll see, to praise Yahweh because of who Yahweh is. A God who cares for those who place their trust in Him. It begins, Alleluia, in the Hebrew. Praise Yah. Praise Yahweh, O my soul. I will praise Yahweh as long as I live. I will sing praises to my God all my life long. So he begins there by saying, inviting others, obviously, hallelujah, praise Yah. And then he immediately turns to himself, telling everyone else to do it. And then he tells his own soul, his own, to do, give the same, telling himself to praise God from the depths of his being. Translated here as soul, but nefesh, we've done it often. It's myself as one who is longing and reaching out and ultimately for the divine. So praise Yahweh, O my soul. I will praise Yahweh as long as I live and sing the praises to God all my life long. Here's another with similar here. I will sing to Yahweh as long as I live. This is Psalm 14. I will sing praise to my God while I have being. Then, in verse 3, we read, do not put your trust in princes, in mortal human beings in whom there is no help. Mortal human beings, the word is Adam, and Adam comes from the Hebrew word Adama, which means the earth or the soil. Doesn't mean clay, actually, but means soil or earth. And dust, the dust of the earth, afar. So it's calling us mortal human beings is simply a recognition that that's where we belong. And we know that because when we die, that's what we go back to, visually. And here's a couple of other texts that say, do not put your trust in princes, in those who are powerful, immortal human beings in whom there's no help. Well, Jeremiah has this to say, thus says Yahweh, cursed are those who trust in mere mortal human beings and make mere flesh their strength, whose hearts turn away from Yahweh. Blessed are those who trust in Yahweh, whose trust is Yahweh. Psalm 60. O grant us help against the foe, for human help is worthless. With God we shall do valiantly. It's He who will tread down our foes. And Psalm 118. It's better to take refuge in Yahweh than to put confidence in mortal human beings, Adam. It is better to take refuge in Yahweh than to put confidence in princes. Identical with our present psalm. So it's a constant enough theme. And why not put trust in princes and in mortal human beings? He tells us in verse 4, when their breath, ruach, spirit, spiritus is the Latin and ruach is the Hebrew, so spirit, breath, that's what it means. When their breath departs, they return to the earth, to the Adama. On that very day, their plans come to nothing. So I thought I'd stay with that theme for a few texts just to meditate on it with you from other parts of the Bible. Here's Wisdom, Book of Wisdom, chapter 15. Humans made of earth a short time before, after a little while, go to the earth from which they are taken. All are taken. and when the time comes to return the borrowed souls. We're already moving into a Greek world there, so the word soul moves into the body, soul, Greek. It's not a Hebrew concept, it is a Greek one, so you've got a bit of a cultural difference there, and that's the one we grew up with, of course. Sirach 40 says, all that is of earth returns to the earth, and what is from above returns above. Since our breath, as you know from the story, myth of Adam and Eve, when humankind were made out of from the Adama, when Adam was made from the Adama, and Adam doesn't mean a male, obviously, it's human beings, came from the Adama. That's not what we are, though. We're more than that. God went and breathed his ruach into us. So we've got the divine spirit in a person who is actually from the Adama. So we've got the two warring at times, but vital and interesting and whatever we make up as human beings. So when we die, we go back to the earth. But the breath, which is never ours, because you've got to keep breathing it out again every few, you know. You don't own your breath. Jesus on the cross breathes it forth into your hands. I commit my ruach, my breath, my spirit. So that goes to God, and the rest of us goes into the soil. Psalm 90. You turn us back to dust, and you say, turn back, you mortal human beings. Job, pleading with God, remember, you fashioned me like clay. Will you turn me to dust again? And finally, for this purpose of this verse, Ecclesiastes, or Kohelet. Ecclesiastes is Latin, the man of the ecclesia, so it means the preacher. Kohelet in Hebrew is the man of the kahal. Kahal is the assembly. And the kohelet is the preacher. So they're both the same word in different languages. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 we read, all humankind, all Adam, must go to their eternal home. The mourners will go about the streets. Before the silver cord is snapped and the golden bowl is broken and the pitcher is broken at the fountain and the wheel broken at the cistern and the dust returns to the earth as it was and the breath returns to God who gave it. Beautiful poetic, isn't it? And obviously drawing on customs. It looks like when a person died, then those things that were special to that person would be actually broken and not used by anybody else. That seems to be what's happening, doesn't it? And I'm not exactly sure of the customs, but there they are. A silver cord was snapped and the golden bowl broken and the pitcher broken and the wheel broken. He's dead, so all those things are kind of symbolically indicating that he's dead. Well, we must go to our eternal home. Verse 5 reads, happy are those whose help is the God of Jacob, who wait on Yahweh their God, who made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them. The God of Jacob is in Genesis 28. Know that I am with you, Jacob, and I will keep you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. It's a lovely verse 15. True for all of us, but true for Jacob. Psalm 25, you are the God of my salvation. For you I wait all day long. Who wait on Yahweh their God. I waited patiently for Yahweh. He inclined to me. He heard my prayer, Psalm 40. Psalm 71. You, Yahweh, are my hope, my trust, Yahweh, from my youth. Psalm 130. Hope in Yahweh. For with Yahweh there is steadfast love, and with him is great power to redeem. And a little reflection here from the New Testament, letter to the Hebrews. It's sent as a letter, but it's actually written as a speech. It's a sermon, not a letter, technically. Chapter 4, verse 16. Let us, therefore, approach the throne of grace with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. With that introduction then, or with those beginning verses, our author now goes to describe, it's quite a significant psalm, he describes 10 qualities of God. 10 is a pretty common number, the 10 commandments and so on. So the 10 qualities of God. The symbolism of 10 is a bit unusual, yes, but it seems, the best I can study it is this. 12 is a different symbolism. 12 is a heavenly completion because of the zodiac. It's the heaven's fullness. 7 means perfection. 10 means, and probably as John's just indicated, it's got something to do with the 10 fingers and the 10 toes, and it means fullness from the human perspective, but it's imperfect. Like, we can't get it all. We can't comprehend the heavens, but 10 is our unit, decimal, you know. It's our unit, it's our complete thing, excuse me, as far as we can go as human beings. That seems to be the symbolism of 10. So here he is saying, this is what we can know about God, but there's a lot more to God than this. So let's look at the qualities. Firstly, 1, Yahweh keeps faith forever. What a wonderful thing to say. So my comment is, excuse me, this is the first of 10 qualities which the psalmist attributes to Yahweh. We're told that Yahweh keeps faith forever. This means that God will keep all the promises he's ever made to you and to your children and to the world. God will always keep his promises. We may not keep ours. Though we are unfaithful, God remains constantly faithful. We'll never be without God's love, no matter how dark the road may seem. Can we believe this when things are going hard for us? Thank you, Margaret. It will, thank you. Sometimes we found ourselves unable to keep the promises we've made. Sometimes it's because the promises turn out to be unwisely made. Sometimes circumstances are too complex to unravel. They've simply brought us to exhaustion. We have to let the promises go. There are priests who have to leave the priesthood. There are religious sisters who have to leave the convent. There are married people who have to separate because it's not working out, you know, and it's hurting and destructive or whatever it might be in anyone's circumstances. We're not all fortunate enough to be able to make promises and keep them, because it depends on a whole variety of things over which we have sometimes no control. And to keep the promise might end up being destructive, because the promise itself was not made wisely. So that's us as human beings. We have to be honest and clear and all the time. So might we want to look at the central promises that are still functioning in our lives? Relying on God's grace, could we ask to be more open to the Spirit, which God is certainly offering us, to find more effective ways of keeping the promises which we made in baptism and confirmation to carry on Jesus' mission of love in the world? The promises that you or I make to God don't commit God. They commit us. So I take final vows umpteen years ago to be a missionary of the Sacred Heart. Well, as I understand it, that vow is saying, I won't stop being a missionary of the Sacred Heart from my perspective. So I won't change it because it suits me to change it. I won't opt out of it. I imagine it's the same with marriage and anything else one promises. But it doesn't commit God. So in some people's lives, God is inspiring me, let's say, after so many years of religious life, to come to the awareness that actually this is not what God is calling me to, you know. God is calling me to something else. It's not working, it's destructive, it's whatever. So I might have to listen and obey God and recognize my lack of wisdom earlier in my life. And because God is calling me, grace is calling me, truth is calling me, and wise people around are saying, come on, this is not working, you know. For all those reasons, I might have to accept that I made an erroneous journey here and humbly do what God is calling me to. I hope I'm being clear. In other words, from God's point of view, God is always free to call us to anything. He can call Mother Therese of Calcutta out of whatever the religious order she was in, I've forgotten now. If anyone knows, they can tell me, but she was, I think it was the
Loretto nun,
okay? To call her from being a Loretto nun, to leave them because something was calling her, you know, to care for the poor in Calcutta. And I think and that's happened all through history to people in married life and religious life and priesthood and so on. So what we're doing, I think, is committing ourselves with our best knowledge, but we might find that some, thank God, it's a case for me so far, and I don't foresee a change, the good fortune and the help I was given enabled me to commit myself to a life which actually has proved, seems to work, you know, so I'm still here. But others not. And we just have to be honest. But the point of this is, the beautiful part of all this is, whatever might happen in my life, or your life, or our lives, or the church's life, or the Vatican's life, or anything, Yahweh keeps faith forever. What a wonderful truth. So Yahweh will always keep Yahweh's promises to us. Second quality of this wonderful God, as seen by this psalmist, Yahweh executes right judgment for the oppressed. Well, a reflection. If we believe that God executes right judgment for the oppressed, then a lot of people must not be listening or responding to grace. If we were, the world would not be such an unjust place. So God's inspiring all the politicians in the world, all the leaders of the world in Africa and America and Australia and wherever. God's absolutely inspiring all the priests in the world and all the cardinals in the world, you know, and all the mums and dads. Everyone is being inspired to act justly. So if there's injustice happening, then a lot of people aren't listening. Thank God a lot are, but a lot aren't. Why? I wouldn't know. Too complex a question to go into now, but it's clearly not happening. So that means a lot of people are thinking it's too inconvenient, it demands too much heroism, it means they've got to get crucified if they talk out, or I don't know what's going, you know, whatever. Each of us has to find the answer. But it's clear the world is a very unjust place. So since Yahweh actually executes, not wants, but executes right judgment for the oppressed, but Yahweh always acts through us. So, is God asking me or you to reach out in one or other area of oppression and do what we can, always respecting persons and in love to put injustices right? Little help is being overwhelmed by a huge list. There's a million things any of us could do. That's not the point. I'm not asked to do what I see needs to be done. I'm asked to do what God is asking me to do. Same for you. And God might ask me to do nothing. God might ask me to do one thing. God might ask me to do a little bit of something. And I might see all the needs and go herring out doing 50 things. but that's coming from me, not from God. So we're in a pretty subtle area here, aren't we? But it is about obedience and listening and prayer and discernment and spiritual direction and guidance and wisdom. And because if you've been well brought up, which obviously all you people have been, if you're a well brought up person, there is a danger that you'll do something because it needs to be done, not because you're graced to do it. So God is the one who's just to the oppressed. So the real question is God inspiring me or us as a community to do something in a specific area? Someone else will have to do the other things that need to be done, and God's inspiring them, and we can't live their life and we can't substitute for them. So we have to live in a very imperfect world and do what we are called to do. Can't do any more, shouldn't do any more. If so, am I willing to listen and begin responding? Luke chooses the following text to set out the essence of Jesus' mission. This is what Jesus felt called to do. And by the way, he didn't do much. Didn't have time. 2 years, 3 years. Galilee, backwaters of Palestine, and Jerusalem maybe every now and then, but not much. And, you know, and what did Jesus do? If you look at history, God help us, not much at all. But he felt called to do something, and what he did so beautifully. We're still here. The Spirit of the Lord Yahweh is upon me, says Jesus, choosing this text to give what he saw. Because Yahweh has anointed me. He sent me to bring good news to the oppressed. There it is. Yahweh executes right judgment for the oppressed. Jesus had a strong calling to bring good news to the oppressed. And the good news, of course, is that they're loved, and that whatever the Pharisees might be putting upon them, or the priests putting upon them, or the Romans putting upon them, or the pressure from the Sicarii and these people to join the revolution and knife every second person and go in and get themselves blown up, or, you know, suicide bombing or whatever other people are pressurizing them to do, Jesus was saying, no, be yourself, God loves you whole, to bind up the brokenhearted. And he did that beautifully. I don't know how many people were bound up, not too many, but he did it so beautifully they couldn't forget it. And to proclaim liberty to captives and to release to the prisoners. And because he did it so beautifully and so lovingly, Christianity burst upon the world, and still should and still can and still will. Third quality of Yahweh. This is a good creed. It's a good psalm for someone got to the heart of Judaism so beautifully. Well, here it is. Yahweh gives food to the hungry. Comment. Jesus gave food to the hungry. That's the point of those scenes. 4,000, 5,000, etc. Can we love God without sharing his longing to reach out to meet people's hunger? And look at the hunger. Hunger for bread. Hunger for love. Hunger for a listening ear. Hunger for dignity. A place, a home, a country to live in. When you can't live where you have been. And all the frightened, timid, petrified, self-centered, distracted people want to keep everybody out because there's some people, terrorists, coming in. We've got complicated business, but how can you dare keep a refugee out of your country because there's a terrorism, there's a fear of terrorism? We all agree on this, I know, but you can't do it, but we're doing it. Those with power are doing it. But God gives food to the hungry, whatever they're hungering for. So if you're hungry for anything, God is offering it to you. Don't worry. You're being offered it. But, as with me, the price of accepting it might be too high, so we kind of... Because freedom's a very daring thing, isn't it? You know, if you're offered freedom... I have this image of a budgerigar. I've never had a budgerigar, but inside a little cage... And then Bhajyugas meant to fly, of course. And then someone comes along and very generously opens the cage door and says, go for it, fly, you're free. So I come on the Bhajyuga and I come to the edge of the blooming cage and I look out. There's a cat poised at the bottom of the cage. There's a chicken hawk above. There's a snake twirling its way up a blooming tree. And I think, well, I'll be fed here till I die. I mean, they all love me here, and I got water every morning, and I've got grain, you know, little bits of stuff every morning, and I might get to the cage door and say, well, look, thank you all the same, and just go back to the... because I'm secure, at least. Now, that sounds silly, but that's a lot of human beings. It's pretty normal, and that's what's played on by people who don't want us to think, dare, be free, have our rights, you know, live, have an opinion, disagree. People who don't want that, people who want conformity and their own ideas to dominate, don't want us flying. They're quite happy to have cages all over the world. And whoever invented the television did them a favour, because it's locked everybody in to get rid of their problems in a non-realistic way by feeling very sympathetic for the people you see on TV, and that gets rid of that feeling of sympathy. It doesn't need to clog up, and feeling very self-righteous about all the bullshit on the TV, and so that gets their opinions out, and being very interested in people's lives because they're on TV but they're not real. And so we go to bed somehow or other with organized and wake up in the morning and, oh God, isn't this terrible, I'm sorry I said any of this. But here's the next bit, which is probably right on cue four. He sets prisoners free. Jesus says to the bloke who's carried in by his mates, walk. I mean, look at it symbolically, eh? That's everybody there. And their mates are bringing him in, and he's kind of saying to himself, I can't walk. And she's saying, you can walk. Walk. And you're not thinking physically, of course, are you? You're thinking a lot of other ways. And telling people, and he says to the bloke who's in the tomb, Lazarus, come out of the tomb. Symbolically, think of it. It's a powerful story about millions of us who are entombed. Well, Jesus sets prisoners free. Yahweh sets prisoners free, and you see it by looking at Jesus. Look at Jesus' example there. If so many people are locked into racism, try and get someone out of being a racist and you get your head bashed in. Because it's one of those things we don't know we've got. The truth is, I don't know whether I'm a racist or not. You know what I mean? I don't think I am. I haven't noticed it yet. And I know people from many different races, and it doesn't seem to do anything for me. But pushed to the point, you know what I mean? If I was really challenged at some deep level, there'd have to be something there. Some prejudices that I just haven't noticed, and that's dangerous. So it's likely we've all got a bit of this stuff in us. Racism, prejudice, making judgments before you look at the facts. It's happening all over the place, all the time. So if I see it happening all around me, wouldn't I be a fool if I thought I wasn't doing it? So we need a mirror, and we need a good people, and we need honest people to keep exposing our whatever it is. It's destructive addictions. I'm addicted to giving lectures. No. But I'm at destructive addictions. Inability to forgive. Well, if we are locked into any of these, and you add your own, it's not because grace is lacking. God isn't doing nothing, nor is God intervening and doing everything. God is inspiring with love to own our freedom and to do it. And if we don't, it doesn't happen. It must be because so many of us are insensitive to grace and failing to respond to the inspiration of God's loving spirit to go out and help unlock the prisons that we create in our fear. And I don't, well, of course I don't, but I think the world has gone way overboard into this in recent history. And by going overboard in it is creating the very terrorism that it's afraid of. Isaiah 58:6. Wonderful thing. Loose the bonds of injustice, undo the thongs of the yoke. Let the oppressed go free, break every yoke. 20, 30 years ago, I've given many clergy retreats in my life, I don't know how many, 30 maybe, around Australia. And this is going to sound a bit funny, and I want to put, but I often used to say, look, if ever I'm a bishop, and of course the chances are nil, so I can get away with that easily enough. And if ever I won't, but that would be my motto. But it'd be such a daring motto. Every yoke. And that'll be the bishop we need somewhere, not whoever it is. Imagine having been daring enough to do that, because you'd be crucified. But what a good thing to have. Break every yoke, those imposed by the church particularly, because they're the most dangerous ones, because that's our family. You know, it's like hurts in the family are more hurtful, aren't they, than neighbours hurting you, because it's just so intimate. So, Yahweh sets prisoners free. Fifth point. How are you going? Are you all having a good examine of conscience?